North Carolina Medical Society. We have Chip Baggett, Senior Vice President and Associate General Counsel for the Medical Society, and Eileen Rayner, Dr. Eileen Rayner, Duke OHNS and Board Member of the North Carolina Medical Society. Thank you both for being with us. Mr. Baggett, at this time, the chair will turn it over to you and you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Dobson, for the chance to speak with you today. This is incredibly meaningful for us because we are in the middle of this crisis and we appreciate you taking the time to work on this right now instead of waiting until closer to time. As the speaker mentioned at the very beginning of this presentation, there is a lot of work to be done and the needs are urgent and we may need you to even figure out how to take health before your schedule. Opening date. We appreciate the bipartisan nature of this. We think that is critically important at this time for everyone to be coming together. If we can get through this, but action needs to be done in a coordinated fashion, in an agreeable fashion, and swiftly. I'm very pleased to have provided for you a report by the North Carolina Medical Society giving you what we hope is a thorough status perspective of what's going on right now. We wanted you to have something that was point-in-time references you were just hearing staff refer to, but was also something you could hold on to and look at later as your conversations continue after this committee meeting is over. You'll notice in there that we gave a lot of recommendations that still are not yet vetted because we wanted you to see ideas and not just things you're actually asking. And instead of going through that presentation as I normally would, I'm very, very pleased today to have one of our board directors here with me. Dr. Eileen Rayner is an accomplished surgeon. She is one of our at-large members, which means she is elected by the body as a whole, not from a geographic region or a specialty or an academic center versus not. She represents all doctors. And so we're very pleased to have her, and Dr. Rayner is going to give you an overview. And then we'll go into our specific recommendation. Of course, the other questions.
Thank you so much, Chip, and thank you so much to keep me to speak to you today. I kind of want to give you a couple of perspectives. One is a boots on the ground overview. This COVID-19 pandemic has created a drastic change in the delivery of healthcare in our state in the span of less than a week and a half. Over the past week, we have noticed a big difference in the number of clinical visits where patients have been asked to not access the healthcare system for routine appointments in order to minimize risking exposure of them to other patients that may be carry the virus and to medical staff and healthcare personnel. Where possible, providers are offering video visits via telehealth options and telephone appointments. This has put a lot of burden on small and independent practices as well as medium-sized practices because there's such a drop in patient throughput. There's also a drastic reduction in the revenue flow, and that adversely affects those independent practices that are struggling to keep their doors open and provide care for patients who need it. The other part of that is that this occurs as a wave. It is not a one time. Everyone gets exposed. Everyone accesses the system. This is occurring over time. And I do have a graphic that I'll show you in a minute just to kind of highlight that and why some of the measures that we've talked about, such as stay at home order, the initial social distancing, are put into place to try to decrease the burden on the hospitals and the healthcare facilities. We have seen a significant uptick in the number of positive cases over this past week, and we hit the over 500 case mark yesterday. With testing, I know there were some several questions that were related to testing. Because there's not a cure and there's not really a treatment, for mild cases, the recommendation is for patients to self-quarantine. And mild cases are patients who have fever, sore throat, and cough, but don't necessarily have other respiratory issues. The patients that are having underlying respiratory issues and the at-risk patients, such as the elderly or patients who have comorbidities, are the ones that are needing the resources available with the hospitals and the ICUs. And that is part of the reason that several counties have issued stay-at-home orders like was previously mentioned. The other thing is, despite the fact that we have virus, we also have other normal ongoing-related health issues, such as cardiac events and strokes and diabetes-related complications, cancer care, and trauma. So we are mitigating all of those things on top of this, you know, extreme strain on our healthcare system. If I can show you this graphic, I'm going to see if I can figure out how to share my screen with you so you can see it. Is that, are you all able to see this?
Dr. Rayner, we are not at this time.
Okay, let me try it this way. Okay, how about now?
Dr. Rayner, this is Will Tomlinson with our IT department. To share your screen, click the share button at the bottom and then select the screen that you'd like to share.
Is that working?
Perfect. Yep. And if you were to take it into full screen mode, we would see that as well. Or into the slideshow mode, I mean.
How's that?
Perfect.
That should be. Okay. So what this graphic comes from the COVID Act Now, website. And this was a report that Dr. Baggett and the North Carolina Medical Society put together. And this timeline is not 100%, but what it's meant to show you is that if we do minimal action, here is the hospital kind of bed capacity, approximately 25,000 beds in North Carolina, approximately 3,500 ICU beds in North Carolina. Like Ms. Burns said, we are getting more ventilators, so I don't know how many ventilators are available now, but we could assume it's going to be far less than 20,000. So this black line here shows the capacity. The red peak shows if we did minimal action. So sort of social distancing, but, you know, prior to last week, there wasn't really much of that happening. And you can see the timeline is very short from the end of this month until the middle of April, where we would way exceed capacity. The second curve is generally just do social distancing. It's a longer time till we hit the capacity and exceed it, but we still will exceed capacity. And then the shelter in place, which is sort of an extreme measure of stay-at-home measures that have been placed in some of our counties, you can see that the availability of the healthcare system to provide care has extended out a lot further. I expect with the stay-at-home, we're going to be somewhere in the middle of the orange and light blue curves. But you can really see by the graphic what is meant by exceeding capacity. And the problem is then, if we don't have the capacity to take care of the COVID patients, we won't have the capacity to take care of all the other patients that also will need help for their other unrelated problems. So I'm going to get back out of this, and that way you don't have to look at that graphic full time. And so there were some specific things that we kind of asked or talk about that we felt like might be beneficial for the legislature to consider. So some of the things that we were talking about was ways to stabilize our and small practices, because they are the meat and potatoes of our state. They are the patients, they are seeing the patients that need help from everything, not just COVID-related illnesses. And if they cannot keep their doors open,
Dr.
our bigger care systems, yes.
Dr. Rayner, I apologize for interrupting. Just wanted to let you know you are still sharing your entire screen. So you may want to
check
that out.
Let me see if I can get it to stop for you. Okay. Is that better?
Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. So we really need to be able to keep our practices and our small practices and in medium-sized medical practices open and accessible for patients. So that is a critical need across the state. As you heard from Ms. Burns earlier, there are quite a few counties in our state that have minimal hospital resources, and we really have to figure out ways to be able to reach all the patients across the whole state. She also mentioned that insurance coverage for telehealth and telephone visits has picked up by the federal government, and that is something that is really important across the state as we navigate this sort of new reality of trying to keep patients that are somewhat healthy out of the healthcare system, at least until the pandemic has resolved. And we also need to allow for the uninsured patients in our state who have COVID-related illnesses to be able to be covered, so either be Medicaid eligible or have some sort of coverage so that they don't have even more of a financial hardship than they will already. We're trying to avoid barriers to care, such as things like prior authorization or the network coverage issues. So in this situation, this is under an emergency kind of situation, we should not have to worry about whether someone is in or out of network for either pharmacy or emergency care or care for COVID-related illnesses. And also the avoidance of COVID-related cost sharing, like co-pays, high deductibles, and ensure care coverage for testing and related treatment, whether that requires ICU care, ventilator management, or other things. We did talk a little bit about the stimulus for North Carolina independent practices. Some of those things could involve waiving loan payments for 60 to 90 days or deferment of utility bills so that they can keep their staff on payroll and keep their doors open. And then Ms. Burns alluded to the equipment issue and the ICUs and ventilators, and hopefully with working with other companies and the federal government, we'll be able to access more PPE and ventilators for our patient needs. And then finally, applicability of the Samaritan laws for physicians that are responding to COVID-19 specific cases, and using the fact that this is an emergency situation to help those providers that are treating patients that are related to COVID-19 issues. And then ultimately, I think having some lessons from this emergency management system, like public health and public policy, and from an economic standpoint, because there's going to be so many downstream economic effects, not just for the healthcare system, but overall for the entire country. And so having some long-term plan strategies to mitigate that over time will be beneficial. And the fact that we have a strong economy in our state up to now will really make a difference for the providers and for everyone here.
This is Chip Baggett again. To add to Dr. Rayner's presentation, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Baggett, you're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to put a couple of exclamation points on things that Dr. Rayner said. I have had more calls in the last 2 weeks from members than I've ever had in the course of my career representing physicians in PA. And those calls they're desperate calls. They're calls where they're saying, I can't get through the normal channels of operation to get PPE. So I'm deciding right now whether to expose myself potentially to keep seeing my patients or close my doors to my patients. I'm having conversations with folks who are furloughing, being off their staffs right now, critical staff, because of the lack of not just the elective or non-urgent surgeries that Ms. Burns was speaking to, but the fact that these are other services that really just are not within the kind of primary spectrum how we need to cope with this disease. Because you'll remember the guidance just a few weeks ago was that our community clinics were going to be the front line. That's where the testing was going to be. That's where all the screening was going to be. Because we're going to try to keep people out and away from the hospitals. But at the same time as we were asking them to do that, we had not properly equipped our members to do that. We had not properly equipped healthcare providers across the state. And I'm not just talking about rural communities. I'm talking about urban centers also. On top of that, our physicians and PAs and other healthcare workers are having to worry about, okay, even if I do have the PPE that I need, the personal protection equipment that I need, should I go home? Should I stay in the same room as my family? Should I sleep in the garage? What if my health system or my employer tells me that I've got one mask for 5 days and I know that that mask is going to is this jeopardizing my own family? It's like they can take the risk can they really afford to take the risk for their families? And then on top of that, that last point that Dr. Rainer made, you know, the fact that they're also then having to worry about whether under these difficult circumstances, when they are not necessarily able to have all the information and all the resources available that they normally would, they're having to make critical medical decisions under the same potential of lawsuit later, that they're having to deal with in any other situation where there are normal things occur. You can just, all that together, you can just imagine the pressure that is building up. One of our board members just the other day talked about how he was the dirty doctor because he just happened to be on call the night that they had their first case. So that was it. He was on. He was dirty from there on out. And he finally got out of work after 3 or 4 days of kind of constant work and went home and thought he was doing just fine and realized that his hands were shaking. Right? So when you talk to the speak to the question of what are we doing for caregivers, we're wrapping our wellness services for the North Carolina Medical Society around all of our workers. I know that all employers have their own employee assistance program that they're offering. So I was on a call with Psychiatric Association last night, but there was discussion of programs being put together just for healthcare workers. I was very pleased to hear about that. But this is a critical time where it looks like we are asking you for a lot without really talking a lot about our patients. But every single bit of this, whether it's cash flow, whether it is equipment, whether it's wellness care, every bit of that is so that we can stay available and well and healthy to serve patients in the state room. So I just wanted to put that kind of emphasis mark. We would be very welcome with any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Baggett. Members, for your planning purposes, the chair will allow 10 minutes for questions, and then the chairs of the committee will have concluding remarks. Chair Cunningham, the presiding chair, will turn it over to you to recognize members for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question from committee member Representative Jean Farmer Butterfield that is directed to you, Chairman Dotson.
Okay.
Representative Butterfield, you have to take your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is based on looking at future presentations, and I know that the chairs probably have already talked about some presentations that this committee or subcommittee will hear. And one of the things that I'm hearing a great deal about statewide is the IDD community, people with intellectual development disabilities and how they're tying into this epidemic. And I just wanted to make sure we got that on your radar in terms of future presentations.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ed Cobb, you're recognized for your question to Mr. Baggett.
So much. Thanks, Chip, for being here. Thanks for your very eloquent remarks. And being in the primary care business myself and dealing with this on the front lines of our own patients here today. 3 weeks, my question to you is what else can the state do or do better to help these small practices get the PPE they need? Because your point is well made about they get sick themselves. That takes them out of the pool of caregivers, but they can also take this home. What else can the state do?
Thank you, Representative Adcock, for that question. This is Chip Aggett. We've been wrestling with this because this is one of those life and death decisions sorts of things. And we have, and we will continue to try to work through the proper channels. I appreciated Representative White mentioned earlier about contact EMS directly as an avenue. We have tried to work through our regional collaboratives, and some of those we are able to gain access to, and some of them we're not. So I guess the first thing I would say is your usual oversight is very important. Anything that you can do to encourage business, to incentivize business to change operations to produce more of this equipment and then turn it around in their local communities. Ms. Burns made a great point that as it goes to the national stockpile, then it's being routed to places that have already reached their peak. And one of the ways that we avoid reaching a peak is to have it from here out. So instead of after we got into a situation like Washington, California, New York, Texas. So those are a couple things off the top of my head, but we continue to look into alternative ways to gain more PPE.
Thank you, Chip. Follow-up.
You're recognized for follow-up, Representative Adcock.
I would say, you know, one of the things that's happening in this unprecedented time is that we're thinking in new ways because we have to. And as we do that kind of thinking, sometimes things come to us that yesterday we never thought of. So as the Medical Society, the Nurses Association, other stakeholders think of ways that the state could be of more help, share that with us so that we can join with you in trying to address that part of this really big.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that concludes all the questions I have at this time.
Thank you, Chair Cunningham. Mr. Baggett, Dr. Rayner, thank you both so much for your presentations, and we look forward to working with you all in the future.